I'm Anthony Hall, Anthony James Hall, Professor Hall. I am retired. I'm Professor Emeritus at the University of Lethbridge. I had a kind of high-profile case when B'nai B'rith Canada came after me. They took over the board of governors of my university and put very reputationally damaging allegations of Holocaust denial, of anti-Semitism, of for talking about false flag events on False Flag Weekly News with Professor Kevin Barrett, for talking about 9/11 and the possibility that Israel institutions, and especially the Project for the New American Century, which has many American neocons in it, that was the organization that had a lot to do with organizing 9/11, not Osama bin Laden and fundamentalist Muslims. Although
Okay, well, Anthony, can you start by just answering some of those allegations, giving your version, your side of events?
it never came to a sufficient head. I never knew if I was being if it was being alleged that I said 100 things wrong, one thing wrong, whether my tone of voice was right or wrong. So it eventually came down to I retired. I was full professor, so I retained my status professor emeritus. And so it's kind of a draw. To me, it was kind of a prelude to what we're seeing now, where the cancel culture is becoming very broad, and you can just eliminate whole classes of professional people, including professors, if they don't get the jab. It seems that this kind of censorship and extreme censorship of the media is taken for granted. It's increased greatly in recent years. So I feel that I was through the ringer at a sort of earlier stage of the same phenomena that we're seeing now, that 9/11 is really the prelude to what we're seeing now. The 9/11 false flag leads to this medical false flag, which really isn't much about a virus. It's much more to do with a grab for power and a design to change the banking system and the way finances are structured, and basically to depopulate, and the survivors would become a kind of new form of high-tech slaves through transhumanism, through artificial intelligence, the injection, the insertion of all this nanotechnology into human beings. Seems to me that the precedent is now set. You can do big experiments on human subjects, and all the rules seem to have been thrown out when it comes to careful and cautious medical procedures. It's sort of laissez-faire capitalism on a grand scale. It's not even capitalism anymore, because they have the state totally in their corner, the big pharma, the big tech, the big media. So we're in an information war, and working in the academy, and working side by side with a lot of people who now might be accused of being woke, coming from a liberal education college. I feel sort of well situated to talk about some of these developments, and I'm
Yeah,
looking
well,
forward to doing that with you now.
let's just get back to these anti-Semitism accusations, because the idea that 9/11 is part of a Jewish conspiracy, how do you answer accusations saying that Anthony Hall has been promoting that idea?
Well, let's say a Zionist conspiracy. Let's say, Project for the New American Century is not, a big popular organization among Jews generically. It's a very explicit organization for people with close access to how the White House operates, how the Pentagon operates. We're talking about specific groups of people. We're not making ethnic slurs or ethnic generalizations. So when you say Project for the New American Century had something to do with 9/11, your critics will then come back and say, oh, he says Jews did 9/11. You know, that's an absurd notion. But false flags do happen. I was doing with Kevin Barrett every week where we're doing false flag weekly news, and there were things blowing up here, blowing up there, and it almost always came back to an explanation that some Muslim extremists did it. Those Muslim extremists, if you look a little more closely, you find that invariably they have relationships with intelligence agencies, and they're kind of set up to do things. If we can't talk about something like 9/11, I was basically instructed by my administration at my university, you must say Arabs did 9/11. That's required. Everybody knows Arabs did 9/11. Well, how does everybody know? Well, we all agree. We see it on TV. I was kind of appalled that the administrators of my university were deciding that, you know, without doing any research, they could decide how to explain the events of 9/11 and all the intricacies of it.
It's fascinating, 9/11. You know, what you've been going through in Canada compared to Professor David Miller here in Bristol University. He was doing really groundbreaking work and probably some of the best in the world in a similar area, which is showing that the media coverage of the links between Muslims and terrorism was just totally off the scale. That they were pushing this idea without the evidence, and that sort of thing is in academics and sociological circles was gaining some traction. David Miller was getting very well respected, speaking all around the world, etc. And then he gets pulled up for comments linking the funding of the Jewish organization, students organization at Bristol University, to the Israel lobby. And even though, of course, what he was saying was true, this is construed as anti-Semitic, and he has now lost his professorship at Bristol University. So these sort of things seem to be going on quite a lot. Just before we leave the subject, though, one of the things I've noticed, and we've seen several attacks in the last few months here in Britain, is that another one in the United States just a couple of weeks ago, that many of these Muslims seem to be, who are apparently involved in these terrorist attacks, sort of on the verges of mental illness. And so this might possibly be part of their, you know, being manipulated in recruitment. So we're being told they're lone wolves, where maybe they're not.
Looking for sort of challenged individuals who couldn't do very much on their own, and then feeding them the weapons or material and instructing them what to do. It seems that there's a high premium on sort of mentally challenged Muslims who can be set up for this kind of thing. When we talk about this pattern, let's remember that since 9/11, we saw a proliferation of wars against Muslim majority countries, whether we talk about Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya. We could talk about the Somalia complexity of things that happened, Sudan. When you're going to go to war with Muslim majority countries, wouldn't it make sense to conduct a false flag to demonize Muslims, to cause the general public to feel very afraid of Muslims? And then to, after 9/11, just a series of smaller events to keep the pressure up. I mean, David Miller and I, you know, we would get into the funding mechanisms, for instance, the Jewish philanthropic organizations that funded media to cover these events in a certain way, like who benefited. A term that I think is necessary to use is wars for Israel. The United States, which has a powerful Zionist community, a powerful Jewish community with quite a bit of influence over how the media runs, to get the United States to do the heavy lifting militarily for Israel, to destabilize the region, because to destabilize the region is good for Israel. Divide and conquer is a very old system of imperial rule. Bernard Lewis comes from Britain to the United States, and it all seems to start with the funding of the Mujahideen and the creation of a Muslim extremist army to overthrow the Soviet-backed regime in Afghanistan. You know, variations of this keep developing. So how do you justify and pull the public along with the war-making activities of the military-industrial complex? Who does this? I mean, it's not an accident that Israel in 1979, Benjamin Netanyahu hosted the Jerusalem Conference on International Terrorism. The history of Israel is very tied up with the history of the deployment of terrorism to achieve political objectives. So we have to be able to talk about these matters, and we have to be able to consider them and to say that we have to be cognizant of the fact that we should never mention Israel or Zionists or Jewish people in any of this analysis. Well, that would be absurd.
Also, I mean, taking this up to almost another dimension, Anthony, it's almost as if someone somewhere is trying to construct a religious war.
Well, we're seeing a very active series of promotions of all kinds of divisions, you know, black against white, gay against straight, Christians against Muslims. It goes on and on. So this divide and conquer strategy, which is old as imperialism itself, it's being played out in spades these days. And now we have, you know, maskers and anti-maskers and pro-vax and anti-vax and all of this COVID phenomena. It seems that there is a very conscious effort to divide communities against one another, to divide people, to divide families. I mean, the divisive nature of this thing has been, you know, astronomical in terms of dividing families, dividing married couples, dividing churches, and on and on.
Another thing that you're actually quite well known for, which we haven't even touched on at all, Anthony, and I think it's incredible, groundbreaking work you've done, is through your book Earth into Property. Now, this is really, I suppose, almost like a kind of, well, I wouldn't say a Bible, but certainly it's a kind of chapter in the Bible, looking at privatization, because this seems to me to be the ultimate privatization, the idea that you can privatize the earth. And this is actually, it started probably here in Britain in the 15th century or so, 16th century, to really take off and really accelerated after the English Civil War. But it's really this whole idea that people have nowhere that is actually theirs, that they can call their own, whereas in the old days they had everywhere. And that is actually a thing that many native peoples understand, but the Western culture doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, as we were sort of veering away a couple of decades ago from the New Deal the reality that we have some, you know, public health care, some public broadcasting, some public institutions, but then the emphasis seemed to be, no, everything has to be privatized. It has to be broken up and owned and somehow bought, you know, put in a position where it can be bought and sold. You think of corporate shares and how that's an incredibly ambitious system of dividing a collective property into individual pieces of property that can be owned. And as I was looking at this discourse developing in the, say, 1970s, 1980s, I'm thinking, well, what about the privatization of, say, the Western Hemisphere? In 1492, you know, there was no markers in any accountant books about the value of resources in the Western Hemisphere. But then in the next 500 years, little by little, the land gets divided, the resources get divided, all sorts of corporations are created. This process of transforming Earth into property, of transforming the collective space into space that can be owned and further privatized, and finding new sources of, say, genes to be patented or different types of microorganisms to to be subject to genetic engineering and patented, or even human species now to be patented, because, you know, we are being, through this genetic modification process coming from this injection, which is not a vaccine, it is a kind of a beginning of, you know, genetically modified humans. We've seen genetically modified vegetables, plants, you know, seeds that will not go from one generation to the next. So they can be sold by the Monsantos, by the agricultural companies, by the car deals.
That's the so-called Terminator technology. But we have actually, over the last 5 years or so, even seen designer babies, something which really was just the idea of science fiction years ago. And it's quite clearly morally reprehensible.
Yeah, and as we go into this transhumanist world and we combine humans with biodigital technology, with nanotechnology, with so computers can meld into your organs you can be monitored, and maybe your attitudes and predispositions can even be controlled, you know, through graphite, through 5G technology. I mean, the ambitiousness of first this sort of culling the population, and then the survivors reprogramming human genetics, combining human genetics with physical machinery, with biological other, you know, genes from other species. It's unimaginable what's going on. And to think that now the precedent has been set that you can just experiment on human subjects to your heart's content, like, you know, has been happening with this untested injection, this gene modifying injection, and now it's coming out that there's experiments happening within the larger experiment, that there are lots and batches of different degrees of lethality. Of course, that's against the law. The idea of doing drugs is they're supposed to be standardized from unit to unit. You know what you're getting. But it seems that there's so much laissez-faire, like states just saying to the vaccine companies, do what you want. We won't monitor you. We will, you know, we'll even try to help you, you know, keep your information private for 75 years. You know, there's no overseeing committees. It's really an example of the state favoring certain companies, and, you know, financing certain companies to do certain things, and then exempting certain companies from any regulation whatsoever. And where is this leading? You know, it has very disturbing implications for where we're headed. It's just like they just took the rule book of medical precaution, threw it out, and said anything goes when it comes to this experiment.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, I'm going to push you on that. So where do you think, you know, where is it leading? It's obviously leading somewhere pretty dark.
Well, the one of the oldest institutions and most persistent institutions is slavery. And, you know, we have a certain vision of slavery, the African slave trade, you know, the transatlantic African slave trade. We all have images of that. But if we're now subject, for instance, if we're being run by artificial intelligence, and nobody explains to us what these artificial intelligence programs are supposed to accomplish, let alone explain to us that there's going to be competing artificial intelligence programs trying to manipulate us into doing certain things. I mean, then you think we're heading into an era where maybe 90% of the work being done right now could conceivably be done by robots and, smart robots. Those robots will be reprogrammed they will be, human beings will have to be in synchronicity with the working of robots, and our mentality and our motivations will have to become more robotic to fit into and adjust to this robotized world. And of course, this is about empowering a small group who have no intention of giving up their multi-billions, who would just like to expand their ownership of private property, which they've been doing in spades in the course of these 2 years. There's been a huge upward transfer of wealth to the people running this and behind this, and the financiers and bankers who are seeking a radical remaking of political economy. So, you know, as we read about transhumanism and Carl Schwab, you know, this is what he promotes. This is really what the Great Reset is referring to, this kind of thing. This is a dark future for humanity. Once our genes are altered, once the nature of our perception is altered to achieve certain political objectives, you know, we can't reverse that. We're not the same type of living beings as we used to be if this takes hold and grabs us. And this is why, you know, a minority of people, and it's not that many people, but those who do really take this on and go into it say, you know, this is so draconian what the people running this thing seem to have in mind for us. The future of humanity, you know, looks so dark and desperate for those who are to be transformed into a new kind of living form that is, you know, part mechanical and part inherited biology and part genetically modified and part nanotechnology, and the idea that you know, they're already conducting experiments on us without the usual you know, references to the principles of the Nuremberg Code, and saying that you shouldn't do experiments on humans without informed consent. Okay, informed consent is one thing and coercion is one thing, but to say to people, okay, you can keep your job but then you have to take jabs, you know, mandatory jabs, that's extortion. So we're giving up bodily autonomy. You can jab us with anything. You can call on you know, the state to back up the fact that the state is going to be backing certain companies in their experiments on human beings. This is, you know, we've got to become conscious and very organized very quickly to, you know, get a grasp on this and to see that this virus, of course, what's your view on it, Tony? I mean, there's a Christine Massey. She contacted 90 jurisdictions and not one jurisdiction could say they have isolated the virus.
I have no doubt about the virus having been isolated. I mean, it was published. The genome was published by the Chinese towards the end of January 2020.
I followed all that. And there is that issue. If it is a bioweapon, you can't have it both ways. If it doesn't exist, but it's a bioweapon, obviously there's a problem with that. I'm just wondering. You know, I've written all about the bioweapons, and the bioweapon aspect of it is really important. You know, the bioweapon programs in China, in Russia, in Britain, in Canada.
I mean, your Canadian compatriot Greg Felton in Vancouver has done a fantastic job, I think, in his book in pulling that apart. I think he was the first person in the world to really put it together in a book form. The hard evidence behind it being engineered. You know, the idea really is to take, I suppose, if you were the most evil biological warfare person on the planet, this is exactly what you'd do. You'd take something which was incredibly contagious, such as one of the types of common cold virus, and you would splice into it. This technology has been available pretty freely, really, for the last 6 or 7 years now. You'd splice into it something like one of the really nasty parts of an AIDS virus or a SARS virus, and that's, it seems, what they've done with this. And then what they've done is they've blocked the use of the common treatments for SARS, for example, like ivermectin, like hydroxychloroquine, which were known to actually moderate the cytokine storm that SARS causes. And instead, out round the world went these orders, particularly around the Western world, saying, no, this is a different type of disease completely, and that you have to just treat it as if it's pneumonia. And of course, if you treat a SARS case like pneumonia, they are likely to die. And these treatments were stopped. Anyway, that's my take on this, Anthony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read those articles in late January of 2020, and there was a New Delhi outfit that very early analyzed the gene sequence. And the thing that was emphasized was the spike protein. This spike protein, which, you know, is creates so much havoc with the blood and causes, clots and heart attacks and myocarditis, and it's these spike proteins. So the New Delhi people were saying that there's a spike protein and it has AIDS inserts engineered into it, that it couldn't have happened in nature, that it had
to be engineered. These virologists in New Delhi, to be quite specific, yeah, they said it's unlikely to have occurred naturally. And of course, this has actually been exposed by Fox News and Tucker Carlson mainly, because it's great to see actually, you know, even some tiny part of the mass media taking this on literally, mm-hmm, you know, and dishing the dirt. I suppose that the purpose of that is to stop a war with China, because the idea that we've now, through the mainstream press, got the information that the Pentagon and Tony Fauci and Peter Daszak, all these Western spooks and kooks, were funding this gain-of-function research in Wuhan, has really prevented any kind of attempt to pin this all on China, which seems to have been one of the points of it. But really, I mean, it's an assault on the Western world population, surely.
Well, one of the issues that come up with the what they called COVID-19, it turned out to be, it was contagious, they said, but not that lethal. And, you know, then they had to go through all of this fraud, you know, building up, using the PCR test, the Drosten test, using that to create false positives and to scare everybody with high case numbers. Then when it came to counting deaths, they found ways to change death certificate so that they, you know, inflated the number of deaths maybe 20, 30 times. In the early stages, it seemed that they were really pushing hard to get the scare factor out, because whatever this COVID-19 was, it just wasn't that lethal. It wasn't beyond the level of a flu. Let me just finish this. Let me get it out. What really seems to be the fulfillment of the bioweapon plot or thesis, however, is the injections that are not vaccines, because they don't stop transmission and you can pass it on. But it turns out that the injections, let's not call them vaccines, if there is a bioweapon, that is the bioweapon. That is the bioweapon par excellence. Because the amount of devastation being done, especially in terms of injuries, and is it tens of thousands of deaths? Is it hundreds of thousands of deaths? Is it millions of deaths? The very idea that none of this information is really publicly available, it can't with authority ever be, you can't say this number of deaths or that number of deaths, because it's being hidden. We see how it's being suppressed. And that's when we know that this is not an honest thing. This is a fraud and a scam from A to Z. And the idea that you mandate vaccines when people know it could kill them or damage the rest of their life. That is sadistic beyond, that is a war crime.
So you and both, us here in the UK and in Canada have had to put up with these so-called vaccine mandates, which really seem to me like the most hideous psychological trick on people. So the idea is that people have done their research and have realized that the regulators, for example, here in the UK, the people that passed the use of this emergency use of this vaccine, as they call it, that they haven't actually got the qualifications to do the job. If you look through their CVs, there's just nobody there that understands this, for example, in the regulators, because it's a revolving door and those people have been put in there precisely because they will come up with the regulations that will make the industry smile and the shareholders smile. Use of the mandates is particularly hideous. Canada are having there is some sort of pushback actually finally going on there against it.
Yes. So when the mandates started to come out at the end of summer and the beginning of autumn, I'm pretty sure that it wasn't immediately understood what the full implications are. That, you don't have any choice. If you want to keep your job, you have to take this. Some professions have been quick, firemen often, sometimes police. But university professors have been sort of welcoming the mandates. At the schools where mandates are embraced for the faculty, staff, and students, the faculty seem to welcome the idea of being sort of protected from the students. They've sort of swallowed this concept of mandates. I heard it said in a group I was involved in, we were talking about mandates as coercion to force you to take these injections. But somebody said, well, it's more like extortion, keep your job and you have to take a jab. This is unprecedented. And once you can force this violation of a person's bodily autonomy, their sovereignty, their ownership of themselves, and of course, to become a slave is to lack ownership in yourself. And if you go along with these mandated vaccines, you're basically giving up ownership of yourself, because if they can put foreign substances, which are known, you don't see it on the censored media, you don't see it coming from the pharmaceutical companies, but the Yadins, the Fulmix, the Wodargs, the Bhaktis, they're making it very well known that there's a huge dark side to this, a huge injurious, lethal side to these mandatory vaccines. One of the things that is going on in Canada, when Trudeau, Justin Trudeau, who is, a child of the WEF, who went through that program, was selected by Carl Schwab and others to be educated, for quote unquote leadership. He's now promoting the Great Reset. He's a cheerleader for the Great Reset. He's a good friend of Bill Gates. They sort of grew up together. So he's been pushing mandates on truckers going across the Canada-US border. And so truckers have got organized. And right at this minute, there is, 50,000 trucks, a huge convoy coming from all parts of the country. From the big convoy is coming from the west, coming from British Columbia towards Ottawa, but there's also a arm coming from Nova Scotia, New Brunswick to Ottawa, and also coming from the north to oppose the mandates, to oppose Trudeau, who is really a supercilious right now. He has really become one of the really repulsive governors of our states and provinces. One of the things that you have to wonder about is clearly there's people running the people who run our governments now, and these people running our governments seem to take no reference to us whatsoever. They're bought and sold at a higher level, they're all being given a license to print all the money they want and spread it out to their political cronies and whatnot. Trudeau is doing that in spades. So finally, in Canada, which is kind of known as a polite place and kind of maybe people are a bit shy to be aggressive. But it seems that, the truckers are leading the way now where this question of mandates is being pushed, is being put front and center. But it's much more than that. It's the fact that we've been lied to consistently. You can't believe a word that comes out of the people's mouths the deaths and injuries are well known. we're getting into the realm of premeditated murder. You know, Rainer Fulmich and Yaden, who look at this question of lots and batches and more lethal batches and such, they say, well, this is all premeditated. This is clearly experiments happening within experiments. So now, you know, at The Hague, this legal case that is being developed, the concept of premeditated murder is coming into it. You know, the media people who withhold life and death information from the population, you know, you can't give informed consent if the media is holding back information that you need to make informed life and death choices. So, you know, the media is now, and BBC leads the way. You know, this is an agency that is involved in premeditated mass murder. BBC, you can't escape this now. Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, you can't escape this now. So what are we going to do about it?
Well, I think, you know, it's a combination of raising awareness through the media. Obviously, this is something that can't happen in places like China. We can do that here. I think, you know, actually, I hate to say this in a way, because I spent most of my professional life really campaigning against him. But Rupert Murdoch's empire is doing an amazing job. I mean, here in Britain, he's got his talk radio network on DAB Plus and on various other platforms on the internet, where he's doing really the BBC's job for them. The people I used to work for, who were basically civil servants doing broadcasting and broadcast news, he is basically doing that with talk radio in Britain. He's done a tremendous job with Fox News in the US in stopping any possibility of pinning this whole thing on China. And Sky News Australia as well is another channel of his, which has done quite a good job in Australia in questioning the extreme measures that have been taken there, and really putting the whole country under house arrest and then individual states under house arrest and stopping any travel, for example, out of New Zealand, getting a lot of criticism from Rupert Murdoch. So I think the media and the free press is going to have an absolutely key role in all of this, as, of course, is the legal system. But, you know, the other side doesn't take on a villain-like project like this, Anthony, without making sure it's covered as many bases as possible with its placemen and women who've been bribed, you know, and shall we say they have blackmail information on these people too. So they've been groomed at places like the World Economic Forum, as you were suggesting there, people like Jacinda Ardern, our own Archbishop Justin Welby, going through their Friends of and Fellowship programs of Klaus Schwab. And then they've been placed in these positions precisely because they know this is the real people behind the scenes. They know that these people will be easy to manipulate, whether it's just that they're weak characters or that there is blackmail information on them, such as those people who traveled on the Lolita Express, visited Jeffrey Epstein. And what we're seeing now with the rinsing of Prince Andrew for sleeping with a 17-year-old prostitute is a very, very clear message to all of those people that ever visited Epstein Island, had anything to do with the Mossad operatives there, that, of course, people who doubt that just have to look at Whitney Webb and her evidence about Robert Maxwell and Ghislaine Maxwell working with the Mossad. That those people will be very, very clear that unless they sign on the dotted line in the future, they will end up like Prince Andrew on the front page of the Daily Mail, Anthony.
Yeah, well, that's a very insightful narrative there. Thank you for that, Tony. Where is the money coming from to finance all of this? You know, the bribery of Imperial College, you know, and the buying off of faculty members.
Well, there's no shortage of money in these tax-free foundations like the Rockefeller Foundation, the Wellcome Trust, you know, the Guggenheim. There is a whole list of them. And, yeah. You know, Rockefeller, of course. And there's no shortage of money in these places, these tax-free foundations.
You know, these central private banks, Federal Reserve in the United States is part of that, and they have the capacity to just generate new money money with debt, money that eventually is going to be the private bankers who have the license to create this kind of money will you know, definitely get their piece of the action through compound debt. So is that going on? Is there, you know, we know that the Defense Department in the United States, there's 21 trillion that have gone missing that, you know, can't be found in the books. It started on 9/11 with, you know, 2.3 trillion that Donald Rumsfeld told us about, and that amount has been growing. So I think the world financial system, you know, is, there's a lot of dark corners in it and operations that can create kind of money that can't really be accounted for. And I would suspect that this operation is like that. When you think
I mean, the money system is very deliberately opaque, isn't it? It's well out of the public. You know, somebody can have a credit card where they can spend countless millions and no one will even question it. So some people have got this link in, and this is a reward given to people for working for the international organized crime. I mean, I mentioned this whole Bond villain thing, and I do think it's a bit like that. And in a way, you know, these people are on a hiding to nothing. They cannot succeed in their plan. Humanity is just too resilient, ultimately, and largely because of the fact that there are separate power blocks out there who are not going along with all of this, much to their consternation, like, for example, the Orthodox Russians. But anyway, look, it is dark. A lot of it is difficult. But can you give us a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, please?
You know, we're having this discussion. We're not in a concentration camp yet. You know, it suddenly there's 50,000 trucks heading off to Ottawa, and suddenly many of the restrictions in UK have been removed. And but, you know, are they playing with this? Is this permanent, or is it part of, you know, turn it on, turn it off, turn it on? One of the things that we have to take into account is, you know, our governments have discredited themselves. Our governments have lied to us, have put us in bad, you know, in seeking to supposedly help us, they put us in dire straits medically. They damaged public health. People by the tens of thousands and millions of injuries are, you know, faced with a scale of carnage in the human kind that we maybe haven't seen before. So our media has lied and has been censorious, or parts, you know, with some notable exceptions, maybe the Fox News people and the Rupert Murdoch family, maybe the younger people are coming into the fore now and are having some influence on that organization and changing it.
But I would suggest it's more to do with old Rupert himself. He's going to be pegging out soon, and so he's starting to think, well, I've got nothing to lose.
Yeah, well, you're closer to it than I am, although we see Fox News is, you know, who would have thought Fox News would be getting closer to telling the truth on some of these matters, you know, through Tucker Carlson's show especially. But, you know, the failure of our medical system, the buying off of the medical system, the professional organizations and colleges of doctors, the fact that they are just, you know, bribed to go along with the program. You know, I think of universities going along with these mandates, and universities, when you read about these hundreds of billions and maybe even a trillion of, you know, federal money in the United States going out to fund research, that money is going largely to professors. And so the universities have, you know, sold out and are really compromised, and they are deeply involved in you know, the perpetrating this scam. There's lots of involvement on the part of the university and very little pushback when it comes to these mandates from the universities. And you would think that would be where you would get a high level of discussion, of debate, you know, between scientists with different interpretations. And we do get a certain amount of, you know, really high profile, the McCulloughs and Maloney's. But McCullough is an academic of sorts, the Bhaktis. You know, we do have a certain enlightened group coming out of the universities, but by and large, it's become a pretty dark place. Our cultural institutions, our sports institutions, there's just so many parts of society that have discredited themselves. And, if you're doing independent research and you're not drinking the Kool-Aid and sort of just listening what you get on out of mainstream media, but doing independent research, you would become aware of how badly we've been betrayed by the courts. Like, the courts don't seem to want to deal with, well, the government says there's a basis for an emergency measure. They basically haven't proven it, however. And, we have all kinds of people saying, no, they're playing with the data. They're misrepresenting the data. They're exaggerating the data. So all of these cases depend on, is there a reasonable basis to overcome our constitutional protections and our civil rights and our human rights and civil liberties?
Well, look, okay, so you haven't really managed to, give us a kind of light at the end of the tunnel, but I'd like to try and have a go. And that on your final point there about the courts, we've had Piers Corbyn campaigning here against the mandatory vaccines, against really all of these measures, saying that it's all been completely unreasonable. The brother, astrophysicist brother of the former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, and he has been going on the Guinness Book of Records for trying to get as many arrests as he can in the shortest period of time. Still, the man is a free man. The courts have decided not to jail him. No Julian Assange. And so, there does seem to be some sort of understanding and realisation. I mean, I went and reported on a court case in 2020 and found that the attitude of the judge in the case was very much to do with, oh, no need to wear a mask in here, So I think there is definitely some pushback in that direction. It just waits, for the right cases to chug their way through the system. Anyway, finally, Anthony, can you just give listeners an idea of where they can follow your work?
In recent months, I've been publishing primarily on Global Research CA, the famous site started by Michelle Chossudowski, Professor Chossudowski, in 2001, 3 days before 9/11. Anyway, Global Research has been doing a very meritorious job covering this issue. There's about 15 new articles every day. And so that's where I've been publishing. And then I find that when it gets published on Global Research, it's picked up and it can go viral on being reproduced on many sites. And some of my articles have had that happen. But of course, the search mechanisms and big tech is, trying to betray us at every turn. When it comes to, light at the end of the tunnel, let's realize that us having this discussion and feeling empowered enough, you and I, to just let it rip and talk about as we actually see it. And we're not, we're going to be censored here and there. But the fact that we are doing this, I mean, that's I don't know if it goes as far as light of the end of the tunnel. But, I also think that the depth of the issues that we're dealing with here and the severity of the plans, the perpetrators seem to have for us, it's so severe, it's so draconian, that we shouldn't fool ourselves to think that somehow there'll be an easy exit out of all of this. Clearly very powerful interests have invested a great deal to advance their pushing of something called the Great Reset, the reinvention of the global financial system to benefit the sort of winners of the process up until now, even more, to secure their position even more intensively at the expense of everyone else who is, can look forward to guaranteed incomes and social credit scores. And if you don't impress your governors, get good social credit scores, you can just be cut off. Maybe you'll be, this month's injection would eliminate you. I mean, there's, The to clean up this mess and to take accountability to those who are responsible for imposing it upon us. Like, how come Bill Gates isn't on trial yet? You know, well, Rainer Fulmich says the courts in Germany are hopeless. I guess the courts pretty well everywhere seem to be pretty well hopeless. But
yeah, you know, I mean, these people would not embark on anything like this if they thought they were going to end up facing justice. Anyway, I mean,
face justice for anything. And we have a system where, you know, we can't trust our system whatsoever because above the law and it's rigged.
Yeah, and but at the end of the day, look, at the end of the day, I'd just like to wind up by saying at the end of the day, anyone that wages war on humanity is bound to lose because, you know, they're just not going. OK, they may be have delusions of grandeur, which they obviously do after having more money than they could ever spend. And, you know, sort of twiddling their thumbs and thinking about what to do with it next to self-aggrandize themselves. But anyway, would you agree with that?
Sure, I'll agree with that. I just would like to conclude by maybe saying where we might start in reimagining, you know, the next stage of human history. The fact that we have natural immunity systems and that the strongest defense against, you know, this virus and this syndrome is a good natural immunity system. If we began with the premise that we're really going to work on making ourselves healthy and building up the natural capacities of our, you know, inheritance from evolution, from God, however you want to see it, these immune systems that we have inherited are amazing, incredible features of being alive. And if we started with saying, well, now how can we emphasize the health of our immune systems and then work from there? And saying, you know, we want, you know, we're not just vaccine hesitant at this stage. We're becoming vaccine repulsed. And the pharmaceutical industry, you know, as you look at it more and more closely and see how the Rockefellers developed it as a cash cow, and you see how corrupt the doctors have become, you know, we have to move away from that into other ways of taking care of ourselves and dealing
with. Well, look, let me seriously wind up here with the words of one of the posters. I think it was at a London demonstration over last weekend, which was a massive demonstration, a campaign called NHS 100K. It's mainly of NHS staff here in Britain and their supporters who are absolutely refusing the mandate, doing things like getting their nurses and doctors' uniforms and putting them, lying them down in the street in a massive, like, football pitch size thing. And one of the posters at this demonstration was, "Unvaxxed sperm is the next Bitcoin." Yeah. So, Anthony Hall, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and it's great to have an hour to talk at length with you.